go ahead and call the meeting to order. We have four supervisors. Supervisor Decker is probably on her way. We have our two youth in governance. BARC certification of compliance?
Yes, we are certified.
All right. Feature program, watershed initiatives in Kenosha County, which is actually very interesting since we're flooding right now. Go ahead.
So I want to introduce Andy Yencha, who is our basin educator. So, and Andy, you want to tell them what you are?
Natural Resources Educator, actually. We changed names.
Oh, okay, all right.
I'm Andy Yencha, and I'm one of 12, what Extension calls Natural Resources Educators, and we work on land and water protection across the state. We're kind of strategically located in accordance with Wisconsin's major river basins. And Teddy said, you guys like to do stuff. So I thought the first thing I'd ask you to do, since I'm going to be talking about watersheds, is to come up. I've got two maps here, and maybe you can figure out, these aren't the best maps, and you have to bend over, but maybe you could show me where you live on these maps and see if you know what your watershed address is. Are you game for that?
Sure.
Come on up. So maybe we'll click the lights back on real quick.
Sure.
Watershed address.
Your watershed address, yeah.
We live in the city limits.
Your watershed address is like, name the smallest drainage where you live, then name where that drains to, and then where that drains to, and where that drains to. So like for me, I live on the Menominee River, which drains to the Milwaukee Estuary, which drains to Lake Michigan, which drains to the St. Lawrence Seaway, which drains to the Atlantic Ocean. So that's my watershed address.
Okay, so I am...
Closest. Huh. Okay, so you're all in...
I'm on the Pike River.
Oh, you're in the Pike, good. That's what I'm going to mostly be talking about.
Okay. Because the Pike's going down here, right?
Right, right, yeah.
And then that'd be the Pike. I must be underneath the dot or something comes over or somehow ties in here?
If you're on this side of that red line, you're in the Displains.
So where does then, is it this flowing this way and
right,
this is
that's the Pike there.
Coming together,
yep.
Like so?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Because I'm right.
So yeah, so that'd probably be there. There might be a name in a tributary.
Because you don't have here's a local KR and I'm about E.
Okay.
So I'm right kind of in the general area probably of this high spot.
So we'll call it unnamed tributary, Pike River,
yeah.
Lake Michigan.
Michigan. St. Lawrence, Atlanta.
Yep. And then if you're living, yeah, so that is probably within the Fox River.
Yep.
So it might be like Camp Lake or Center Lake, and then I forget what the name of that stream that drains out of there is, but eventually it goes into the Fox. Does anybody know where the Fox drains to?
Oh.
Illinois River, which drains to
Mississippi,
right? Gulf of Mexico, Atlantic Ocean. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Good job.
Anybody different? Anybody on a different
watershed?
So that'd be the Displains. Where does the Displains drain to? Anybody know?
Displains?
Yeah.
Is that
Illinois?
I believe it also drains into Illinois, yeah. And then
yeah.
A little bit upstream from where the Fox discharges. Okay. The Fox discharges in Ottawa. I don't know where the Displains discharges, but yeah, Illinois River, big river, and then to the Mississippi.
Wait a minute. North or south of 50?
Where's 31?
Might you be in this area?
Yeah.
Oh,
so that ties into the Pike.
Yep, that would be what we call the South Branch. And I'm going to be talking a lot about the Pike, so that's good that we've got some folks here from the Pike.
Rick, where are you at?
I'm the direct drainage area tributary to Lake Michigan, the
city,
of Kenosha.
City of Kenosha. And we call that direct drainage because there really isn't a big named stream. There's Pike Creek. Are you familiar with Pike Creek?
Yeah, that's north of me.
That sometimes be confused with the Pike River, but there is kind of a defined, it's really been modified over the years.
Underground.
Kenosha. A lot of it's underground, I understand, yeah. So we call this direct drainage because it's mostly unnamed either ditches or stream channels that have been buried, storm sewers that discharge directly to the lake. All right. Well, great. I brought maybe I can point out these resources for those of you who are up here, and I'm hoping I can give some of these away. I'm going to
realize there's a paper.
You brought paper.
I brought paper.
Yeah.
We haven't got the digital version yet.
Yeah, it's like touching acid.
Feel free to grab these and look at them as I chat. And
paper.
This one on the Pike River, I've got plenty of.
Yeah, say supporting the Wisconsin economy, right?
That's me. So, in terms of major watersheds, Kenosha, I guess I should back up just a little bit more. How much time do I have?
Good. Well, let's see. We probably have to. Yeah, that sounds about right.
So, I work on land and water protection issues, but as Barb said, my former title was basin educator, basin as in watershed. Watershed being defined as the area of land that drains to a named river, lake, stream, or wetland. And I still think of myself as a watershed educator, so all my work kind of revolves around watersheds. In Kenosha County, I guess you've got three biggies. Does anyone want to name them? We've kind of been talking about them already.
Oh, Pike.
The Pike.
Fox.
The Fox. And the Des Plaines.
And the Direct.
Those are the ones. And the Direct, I guess. Yeah. Well, I don't think of that as a major, but sure, the Direct.
It is when it rains hard.
Yeah, yeah. So it sounds like everybody here was aware of the Pike River. How many people know that the Pike River is in kind of the final stages of getting a restoration plan written?
Well, we took the dam out of the Petrified Springs area. That was certainly part of it, correct?
That was actually external, although the plan is acknowledging that. About 2 years ago, Hawthorne Hollow teamed up with an organization called Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network, Root Pike WIN, and they got funding from a mix of sources, thousands of dollars. They contracted with a company called Applied Ecological Services. And the first 2 years, they put together a series of planning meetings that ended up in resulting in some materials and an advisory committee that is now wrapping up providing input on a restoration plan for that stretch of river. And it's going to focus very much on Kenosha County because the Racine County portion, as you'll see, has already had millions of dollars invested in it. So, Pike River, past, present, and future. This is a presentation I gave to that watershed planning group about two years ago. So does that picture look familiar?
It's got to be readily visible.
Oh, yeah.
That's right where the Pike discharges.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll take you on a journey down the Pike here and try to do it in the next 20 minutes or so we have time for questions. Here's those major Wisconsin watersheds, and you can see the arrow down there is pointing at the Pike River watershed, which...
not big.
Not big at all. But one of the first watersheds that was developed as Wisconsin developed, so it's seen a lot of changes. Here's a close-up of that watershed. It's the area in red, and you can see it's kind of divided by Racine and Kenosha County. 56 square miles, about 42 miles of streams that flow all the time, drains to Lake Michigan, the two counties, seven municipalities, about 57,000 people we estimated using Census 2000 data. That's a lot of people for a small area. This is up in the headwaters of the basin. This is in Racine County looking east. The clouds are over Lake Michigan there.
Do you want me to turn
the lights
down?
Yeah, if you could turn the lights off better, that would help. The watershed goes through a mix of urban and rural land uses. There's still a lot of agriculture in this watershed. Most of it's in Kenosha County. It's an interesting area because it's probably going to be prime developable land when the next wave of development takes place, you know, which we know will come. We're in a little lull right now, but the economy is recovering. Most of that ag land is in the town of Summers. So here we are in the town, I guess, looking west down the main drag there, County C. Some of that ag land again, lots of open spaces, still a lot of very productive land where cabbage, corn, soybeans, and probably stuff I don't know about is being grown. A little bit of animal agriculture, but not much. By animal ags, I mean I think there's a few cattle. They might be like heifer cattle.
I don't think there's any poultry in the pike. Zip through these a little quicker. Here we are at the public Kenosha yard waste site, drop-off site, and this is in the South Branch, near where I think one of our students said she lives. This is in the headwaters again. This is an area where they put in some recreational trails after investing millions in kind of rejiggering the channel. This is down by Carthage College. So just scenes from the watershed here. Scenic shot in Hawthorne Hollow. Pet Springs, where they're doing a lot of work, as you guys indicated. One of the unique things I think about the Pike River watershed that didn't really register for me until I did this talk is that you've got UW-Parkside, Carthage, and then Gateway there. So you've got a lot of institutions of higher education in this little tiny watershed. A lot of resources, a lot of intelligent people. Good fishing. So we'll look at the watershed again here. The Pike River has got three branches, the north, the south, and then the main branch. And here's something that most people who think about the Pike don't think about. It's got a bunch of named tributaries. And I think, from my perspective, until you name something, people probably don't care about it as much as they otherwise would. So I made an effort to point out the names of these tributaries. The Pike River, I should point out, was one of the first watersheds that our Regional Planning Commission, way back in the 60s, I think it was, or maybe 70s, they did it was mostly a flooding plan, but they looked at the Pike River Basin, and they're the ones who dug up these names from somewhere. I think they talked to a lot of farmers. But the Bartlett Branch, Waxdale Creek, Chicory Creek, these are all in Racine right now. Lamprecht Ditch, now we're getting down in Kenosha County, School Tributary, Summers Branch, then the Airport Branch. Way over there, Sorensen Creek, which is probably the biggest, and then this little one, the Kenosha Branch, which is kind of urbanized. So these are all named tributaries. Maybe some of those other ones that you see there that I highlighted are named. I just couldn't find those names. So know the watershed. This is kind of going from the headwaters down. I might zip through these kind of quick because I think your questions would probably be more productive. So here we are up in Racine County. This is where the Pike River gets started in an area that was recently kind of developed. You can see the river there in blue. It flows pretty much year-round. That's the headwaters, that arrow. This is what it looks like. It starts in kind of a stormwater detention pond. There's that pond again, a different view. So this is where the Pike River gets started, and farthest north.
Was that a man-made?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it was a wetland that was enhanced.
Pike River started somewhere. It didn't start with this man-made pond.
Well, that's excellent segue. Kind of one of the points that I hope to convey is that this whole area has been so changed since it started to be developed a little over 200 years ago, that it's hard for us to say with a high degree of accuracy what the Pike River might have looked like. It probably wasn't much of a river if you were like one of the first people to look at it, one of the first Europeans. What it probably was more like was a series of wetlands and marshes and wet meadows and prairies connected by some meandering channels. And as the area was developed, first for trees and then for farms, it made sense for the settlers to kind of begin to constrict the river so they could get at that land easier or farm it easier without having to worry about that water. So they probably pushed the river into channels that maybe weren't as big or as deep or as defined as they are now. And so we're dealing with a river that, from a historic perspective, looks much different and acts much different. And that kind of relates to the to-dos that I'll try to talk about it at the end, what we can do now to deal with these kind of changed rivers. So this is where the river dumps into the lake. And with low water levels in Lake Michigan, I think it's still an issue. The river oftentimes, maybe some of you know, doesn't make it all the way. It kind of ends up infiltrating into the sand short of the lake. And that's an issue for people who fish more than from a water or biology concern with the river. If the fish in Lake Michigan can't swim into the pike, you're missing out on a lot of great fishing opportunities. From what I understand historically, this is not the original historic dumping spot either. It used to, not too long ago, it used to flow down along here and dump in closer to the downtown. It's just they wanted to make this kind of parkland, so they put the outlet here years ago, the city, I think. There it is flowing out into the lake, but that doesn't always, sometimes that's totally blocked and they have to bring in machinery to open it.
Right.
Question?
Sure.
Isn't that where they just did that dredging too? The city did that dredging?
They did some dredging. I think it was not related to this. Think it was
separate.
The harbor. Yep. That was an EPA funded project, I believe.
Okay.
This could use some dredging.
Yeah.
They don't flow.
Just this purpose of this slide was just to point out that, of course, all the stuff that washes off the land into the pike eventually gets into Lake Michigan, and then downstream from where the pike discharges is the intake for Kenosha as water. Now, people in Kenosha are so lucky that they have an excellent source of water, but there is a connection between the river and Lake Michigan, and Lake Michigan is a source of drinking water for people in Kenosha and millions of other people. So there's a very strong incentive to keep the water that flows into Lake Michigan as clean as possible, not just from the pike, but from all the rivers.
Our biggest problem is Milwaukee.
Milwaukee has
storm sewers.
Some big issues. Milwaukee storm sewers, they can do better, but Milwaukee has really cleaned up their act in the last 20 years, and they are really national leaders when it comes to protecting the watershed to improve water management. The discharges that comes from their combined sewer overflows are very, very small percentage of what gets into Lake Michigan. Most of it comes from rivers like the Root River or the Sheboygan River, or the Pike is a smaller one, but that's where all the pollutants to Lake Michigan are coming from.
During the big rains, they get a lot of sewage going into the lake, don't they?
Not too much, really. It's really
in the massive,
in the big picture of things, it's a very small component. It's hard to believe, but that's really what the data tells us.
The media makes it sound much worse.
They do. And they've gotten better too. You notice they've not been as tooting their horn or picking on MMSD as much.
Well, MMSD is the one that promised that the deep tunnel would fix all that, and they spent billions.
We could quickly get on. You should invite me back. I could give the history of all that.
So
MMSD said some things
they
regret.
They kind of set their own
overpromise.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
I mean, just say, hey, we can control except for the once every 10-year rainstorm. Don't say once 100 because those are coming often.
Right. Yep. Like I said, the tributaries, I think it's important to recognize that there's some really high-quality habitat in these tributaries to the pike, sometimes overlooked because they're hard to get to, kind of hidden between farm fields, but as these shots show, some of them are quite attractive. And, of course, you can't protect the river unless you protect the tributaries, just like you can't protect Lake Michigan unless you protect all of these rivers that drain into it. Here's that airport branch. I didn't walk into probably reed canary grass there to see if there was flowing water there. I think this one probably goes dry from time to time, but it's wet enough that they don't mow it regularly. Here's a real nice unnamed tributary in Petrifying Springs Park that drains in right by the USGS gauging station. Oh, this is Sorensen Creek. There, I got the arrow there, one of the bigger tributaries. I wanted to mention that from the perspective of this project, this has got a direct drainage area too, so that area doesn't drain to the pike. That's what that direct drainage looks like. Another direct drainage. So of course, the Pike River gets its water from stormwater and from groundwater. It gets a lot of it now from stormwater, and that's kind of the problem. Like I said, it used to act and look a lot different. It used to get most of its water from springs. There's good data on the water in the Pike River because of this box here. I don't know if anybody, have you ever walked around in Petrifying Springs Park along the Pike River? You may have seen this and think it's like where they store rakes or stuff, but there's actually high-tech equipment in there that the United States Geological Survey maintains. It's electronically, through hard wires, connected to a sensor in the river that I have a picture of. But then this is connected, I don't know if it's either through a cellular connection or if it's got a wire. I think it's a wire, but it's transmitting 24/7 data on river flow. So like right now, if you wanted to, you could go USGS Pike River and you could find the current flow data on the Pike River. And here is that information in terms of the years from 2000 on, and it shows what the average cubic feet per second are passing by that point in the Pike River. Let me see if I, yeah, this is where that station is located, so just below where the south and the north branches meet. And the river normally is not flowing at a huge amount of water. That's cubic feet per second. So if you took a foot, you know, a box that was a foot by a foot, a cubic foot, and filled it with water, and you had like 50 of those flowing in 1 second past one point, that's the amount of water that average flows in the river there. It varies a little bit year to year. What's interesting about the Pike, though, and kind of unfortunate, is because the land doesn't hold on to the water like it used to, because the farmers try to get rid of it as quick as they can, they don't want their fields flooded, and the towns get rid of the water as quick as possible because they don't want flooding. When it does rain, the Pike River rises rapidly and becomes actually a hazardous place to be around. And so this 48, which is an average flow, can jump up to 200, 500, 1,000 or more cubic feet per second. It can really get cooking through there water-wise.
No 11 or 12 data?
It is there. I just didn't pull it out. I think they got it now. I did this in 2011. So you can see a little pipe. Yeah, right there, that's where their wires come in. And I think I circled it. Yeah, that looks like an old log. It's actually a fancy piece of equipment that is measuring flow and volume. And I think it also measures some water quality parameters, temperature, maybe pH. I'm not sure all the things it's looking at.
You don't have any problem with the invasive species, those shells, I forget the name of them.
Oh, the zebra mussels? And the quagga mussels?
Yeah, the mussels.
Yeah, yeah.
Are they going up the river?
You know, I'm not certain about that. I don't ever recall seeing them. Barb, do you know? I've never seen them in the Pike River, so I don't know if they're making their way up the river.
Okay.
Ironically,
I know they have a lot of problem with water discharge.
Yeah.
With those.
Yeah. So you can see a little spike here in September 2011 where the discharge kind of perked up there. Only went to 38. I'm not sure why I put this in here years ago. I think I'll move past it. Here we get up to 200. Well, like I'm saying, the point of these, I think, was to show you how when it rains, the Pike can really jump up quickly and then drop down quickly. So we talked a little bit about this already. This is a picture from the Mukwonago River, which is a fairly undisturbed river in Waukesha County. But this is what the Pike River may have looked more like years past. These channels connecting wetlands, kind of winding around. Maybe more like this. Or this. Or this. A lot of the wetlands in the watershed have disappeared. Well over 50% of the wetlands. We know that because we can look at the soils and tell that they once were wetland soils. So once there are wetlands on sites that are now developed, now you can't really develop wetlands without jumping through a lot of hoops. But in the past, it was really easy. In fact, the federal government paid farmers in the past to get rid of their wetlands. So estimated original acreage, 4,800. What's there now? 351 acres. This is from the sewer pack plan, and actually from a plan the DNR recently did, and updated their Pike River watershed plan. So that's pretty recent numbers. They looked at what kind of those 300 some acres of wetland, what's left, and most of it is forested wetlands along the Pike River, but then there's a mix of some marshy wetlands, some open water ones, like where you might find some lily pads, some shrubby wetlands. Does anyone know what those pipes are doing?
Well, it's for discharge from...
They're from fields. They're tiled. Yep, those are tile systems, and you can see how big they are. They're draining a lot of water from low fields, more than likely wetlands that were converted. And right now, nothing's really coming out of those. Maybe a little drip, but when we start thawing around here, which is going to happen very soon, these will start really doing their job, which is to get the water out of those fields so that the fields are dry enough so that the farmers can get in there, do their spring planting, and so the soil is not so wet that the plants can't germinate. If you're not familiar with drainage pipes, and most folks aren't, they're like, I think, one of the big secrets of engineering that most of our farmland in this part of Wisconsin, you look at it and it just looks like farmland, but if you could look underneath that soil, you'd see this incredible network, all the labor that went into laying these long lengths of tile, of pipe, to keep our fields dry so that they can do what we need them to do, produce food.
The pipe deteriorate after years?
It does, and it has to be replaced. Yeah, I think I got a picture in here. Here's what they used to do. That's how you used to lay tile. You'd manually dig a trench by hand. They had some machines that, you know, kind of maybe steam-driven, but then it's clay tile that you laid in piece by piece by piece. And some of this still functions, but it does decay and break down. And when it does, when it's plugged, this is what you see. You see water ponding on fields. But now they don't do that anymore. Now they lay it down with some pretty powerful machinery that can cut the trench and insert the tile at the same time to a very high tolerance of accuracy as far as elevations are concerned.
Oh, they go to a localized spot to drain the...
They use global positioning systems to, I don't know if they start at the high ground and move the tile to the low or from the low to the high. They can probably do both. But if you look at this tractor, you'll see this. This is the GPS device that's getting a signal from a satellite. So they know that very accurately the depth they're setting that tile so that there's a grade to it. And you don't need a huge grade. In fact, I'm no tile expert, but I think because of the pressure that builds up in those. And I've heard stories from natural resource managers who purposely go into farmland that's been set aside, and they break a tile because they want to create a wetland. And when they break some of these tiles, I mean, it's like the geysers in Yellowstone. There is a huge head of pressure in some of these, and so that can move the water. You know, you don't need much of a elevation change. They do break. Here we go. Here's an example of a broken one. This is, I think, right near the county line. And I don't know if my video will play here. We might just skip it. But you can see that one flowing. So that's the tile system. River present. We've got some issues with eroding stream banks. And depending on the modeling that happens, this is a source of sediment. Certainly not good habitat. An expensive fix that should happen at some point.
Yeah, but some of that erosion is caused by the massive increase in flow rate.
Exactly. That's what the biggest cause is. Yeah, but that flow is caused by watershed changes.
You know, you get a big storm and...
But you have to remember that flow is not really what the river was ever designed for. It's because of upstream development. Mm-hmm. And although I think we're doing a much better job, we're not putting as much water in the river anymore. The high flows we've seen recently are tied to really wet years, you know, whatever's causing that. But it is something that seems to be getting worse. And if we want a river that's better for fish, better for people, then it's something we need to figure out a way to address. And there are, unfortunately, there's no cheap solutions for that, but there are programs out that help. Just another example of slumping streams.
Well, you've got severe erosion. Is it? Does the DNR require that that gets repaired, or does the county just do it on them by themselves?
Yeah, I don't think there's too many requirements that they need to repair it. Not now. This Pike River planning that's happening right now, we're focused on the Pike. I'm right. Sure their plan is going to point out some specific areas where the erosion's bad, and they'll recommend it gets fixed. Okay. But it won't. But there'll be nobody banging on the door to get it done. The only way you could really get into a situation where it's forced is if it's threatening someone's property, but then it probably falls on that homeowner. It's kind of their bad luck. I'm not a policy expert, a legal expert, but very few instances where you can force because of something like that.
Okay.
This is looking downstream from where the Has the new bridge gone in at Pepper Fine Springs? So this is...
Yeah,
this
you gotta go visit. So
good. I should get out there and take a look at that. That's great news.
Yeah, in fact, John Rudy was saying we had a big storm. It was two meetings ago. And he was usually would have had a crew up cleaning up the park along.
Really?
From flooding. And
didn't need to. That's great. That's great.
Many man hours.
Moving that water along, saving money. So this is just an example to show you where all this water kind of starts out. Starts out either in urban areas or in rural areas like this. Because of traditional farming methods, farmers are not as progressive, I'll say here. Maybe that's the wrong word. They're not as receptive to leaving residue on their fields because we do have a cooler kind of microclimate here. And farmers need their soils to warm up as quick as possible. So in lots of parts of Wisconsin, there'll be residue on these fields. Erosion like this can't happen as easily.
You get a lot of fertilizers and phosphorus in there that causes damage?
It's a concern. The bigger concern is just the soil particles themselves, which tend to be rich in phosphorus. And so that's how it gets in, okay. The sediment and the phosphorus.
I'll tell you what, Kenosha's pretty flat, at least around my area in summers, is a lot of farmers. I see more and more leaving. You can tell exactly where the water's flowing because they do not.
They don't plow those areas. That's good. They're leaving those vegetated swales.
It saves some of their field too.
And this picture is not from the Pike. This is from Racine County. So I'll make that clear. Yeah. This is some erosion along part of I-94 on the way up to Milwaukee. But you could probably find this the next time it rains. There's a lot of stuff that washes off our roadways. And occasionally, we still see this. This is a development where they had a lot of erosion control in place, but it was inadequate for a big rainstorm that came through, and it just kind of blew out. So we try to eliminate this, and the county and some of the towns and villages and cities have their ordinances that are designed to prevent this.
Yeah, until you get the natural, species of plant that root deep enough that naturally
controls. Yeah, right, until you can get a permanent fix. This slide is just designed to show that even if you're far away from the river, if you got water draining into one of these storm sewer inlets, you're on a river because whatever goes in here eventually goes to a local ditch or stream or pond or river or lake that eventually, in the Pike River's case, drains to Lake Michigan. If you're in the Fox River watershed, it's eventually draining to the Fox. This is how we get rid of our water. So just like farms have this really highly engineered system of drainage, so do our cities. In our cities, it's a little more visible. And it creates this problem where we really don't want to see all this sediment on this wonderful pebbly, rocky bed because the critters that live there natively aren't used to that. They're used to kind of clearer water with less sediment. So this is the name of the Pike River Planning Project, Pike River Future, and they're moving into their planning phase, and their goal is tied to the goals in the Clean Water Act, fishable, swimmable surface water. When will that happen? Hard to say, but there's a bunch of committed people working on it, and I'm sure they will be successful, maybe not in their lifetimes, but eventually. The plan, when implemented, will lead to watershed improvements. This is the goal. Wetland, spelled wrong, restorations. Stream bank stabilization. Less flooding. Fewer pollutants that are associated with that flooding. Getting into the river, into the Lake Michigan. The plan will also identify ways to restore lost natural connections so that the remaining natural areas and maybe some that have yet to be restored are better for wildlife habitat and better for people to enjoy those ways through hiking, biking, inline skating, you name it. And hopefully that point's clear now that the health of a river is determined by the health of its watershed. So if we take care of the land, we're going to have a better river. Skip over that. There's the old dam, now gone. So progress already. These are up in Racine County. They've done a lot of really expensive restoration there, putting a lot of stormwater detention so that the river doesn't
at the root?
Flash up, no, on the headwaters up in the Racine County in Sturtevant and Mount Pleasant.
Is that that recent construction they were doing over the last year or two?
They've been doing it for years. This is
south of 11?
Yep, yep.
Yeah. Okay.
That runs all the way out to the county, don't it?
It's pretty much the whole North Branch now, down to your county.
Like the ditches and
incredibly. It's a national. You know, it's a national model for restoring a degraded urban stream. Say that again.
Up by Union Grove and that area?
Well, not Union Grove. Union Grove would be the Root River watershed.
Okay.
For Pike River.
This is an example of some of the practices that we'll probably see a lot more of, where the water that flows into there now infiltrates into the groundwater, so we don't even have surface detention anymore. We're putting it right back into the ground where it will become a spring that will feed a stream like it used to be. Another example of what those, I think that similar, it might be from the same development, a different spot, but the same practice in the fall. Well, we do have stuff like this around here. It's too hilly, yeah, right. But these practices are all over Wisconsin now. And rain gardens. This is an example of a rain garden in the Kenosha County. Do you remember the name of this guy? Tom LaDuke.
It's called my lawn.
Tom LaDuke.
In the city of Kenosha.
Here, this is Town of Summers Parks Commissioner. Maybe the name will come to me. I should remember it. Wonderful man. There he is right there. Once again, this is a larger rain garden in a parking lot called a bioretention facility. So the water that once flowed right into a storm sewer now gets a chance to fill up this and infiltrate into the groundwater before it discharges into a storm sewer conveyance, a conduit that'll take it directly to a stream. And we're starting to see more of this. Where people are putting in rain barrels or larger rain cisterns and holding on to water on their property, which is great because then they can slowly use it over time when it's drier so our streams don't get this sudden flush of water. And also, they're saving some money. Water is still pretty cheap in Wisconsin, even though it doesn't seem that way when you pay the bill. When you think about what you're getting for that amount of money, it's an incredible resource we tend to take for granted, and so we're not inclined to save it. And frankly, I'm not sure we really need to worry too much about water conservation because we are fortunate. We live in an area that gets a lot of rain, it's got a lot of groundwater, and we're near the Great Lakes. We've got a lot of water. We need to be good stewards of it, but we don't need to knock ourselves out conserving it. We've got other problems that are bigger. Wetland preservation is a big part of protecting our water resources. Here's in this is the Kenosha Country Club where they had this erosion problem. You can see it there, and they came back and stabilized that. So that's an example of what they need to do to stabilize those banks. Expensive work, but very worthwhile.
This part of the North Branch.
Good science. This would be on the main branch, I think.
Main branch?
Yeah, this would be near where you are, I think.
No, this is east of where I am.
East.
I'm close to the south branch.
But okay. And farmers have these issues where they get these kind of ditches and need to fix those as well. And this is what it looks like. This is from up in Racine, but there's probably a few of these on the pike too. And this is what it looks like when it's vegetated. This is a buffer between the cropping area here and the stream is over here. And so this area stays in a ground cover so that if erosion starts here, it has a chance to filter out. And this is a picture before and then after this area was converted to wetlands. Isn't that amazing? And this is in Racine too. But this
so
is what we'd like
one,
to see more of in the
converting
pike.
It, was the land purchased by the county or the
it
DNR?
Was, it was a farm that was sold off for private homes, and they enrolled the land in a federal program that provided a cost share for doing this kind of work. So,
and so then
farmland.
Does the county, in this case, gain ownership of that land?
No, it's the landowner's property.
Okay.
But they're not permitted to change this practice.
No, of course not.
In this case, I think they have a 20-year window. So for 20 years, they have to leave it. So if farm.
Well, if it's a wetlands and it's kind.
Of, well, they converted it to wetland. It was farmland, but once they enrolled it in this program and took that cost share, they have a. I think I'm not sure. Don't quote me on this, but I think it's like 20 or 22 years. They have to keep it in this. The idea is that by that time, they'll never want to change it back.
I was gonna say they ain't never going back.
Who knows? We've seen strange ethanol when that boom hit. Boy, there was you saw a lot of land coming out, not of this kind of practice, but of just set asides, and farmers were paying the penalty on that. There was a penalty associated with taking your land out of those programs, but. Okay, well, I've moved along. This is Pets Park.
Well, now, go back a couple slides here. Yeah, I don't care.
You all have a show coming up. This is what it looked to look like. And
Katie Park? No.
That's the dam in Pets Park that's been removed. But anyway, are there any other questions I can answer?
Sure, enjoyed your presentation.
Oh, good. I'm glad. I'm a resource for you all. I work regionally based in Milwaukee County, but I see Kenosha and Racine as my two, and Waukesha as my primary kind of area. Walworth a little bit, but you all, if you think this talk would be valuable to other groups you work with, let me know and I can modify it. I'm here to help you, you know, be your connection to the university and also to some of these federal and state programs. So I talked about this. Another program I work with is called the WaterStar program, which recognizes municipalities that are doing a good job to protect their water resources. Kind of instead of picking on municipalities for not doing enough, kind of saying, hey, you guys have it pretty tough. It's a tough climate for doing water protection work. If you're doing good work, you ought to be honored for it. We're in Bristol here. They actually are one of our bronze water stars. There's three levels. It can be a bronze, a silver, or a gold. I coordinate that statewide program. And then there was, when it comes to farmers, there's lots of programs out there to help them do the right thing, but they're really not required unless they're really creating a problem, and most of them aren't. There really are no rules to force them to act. It's a little different when you get to municipalities. There are programs in place that require them to clean up their stormwater, and I work closely with the DNR to help communities do that work. They're called MS4s. It's MS4, 4Ms, or Municipal Combined Storm Sewer Systems. I always get the name screwed up. But City of Kenosha is a member. We work with them. County of Kenosha. Bristol is a member of our group. Pleasant Prairie is another one. So that's another way I engage with your areas. I mostly help them on their public outreach component. They're required to educate their citizens about stormwater. And like you'll see that display there,
Andy,
that's an example of
the really
work we do.
Have to, they have more business to do before they get to their public hearing
all
at
right.
7.
All right. Well,
thank
you. The hook came out.
Yeah,
thank you.
Thank
you very much.
Maybe we can have them come back at the end of the summer.
Sure. That'd be great.
Sure.
And please, keep me in mind as a resource.
I'll get some cards. I'm going to slip out and get some cards over here.
Okay, educator program updates.
I'll just quickly share that Spring Into Gardening was last Saturday. We had over 250 people come, and excellent evaluations. Everybody had a great time again. So
here at the center?
No, we don't fit here. We go to Central High School.
Oh, okay.
So four different sessions, five class choices in every session. So
great.
Up 10% again this year.
Oh,
so,
good.
Yeah. So, all right. So the other is your youth and governance.
Yes, our youth and governance. We need to have another person.
Throw me off.
Yeah. I will share quickly.
I had to throw Mike off.
I have my little notes from Teddy.
Okay.
230 youth were nominated. 58 youth sent in applications. 26 were selected to interview, 14 need to be selected to serve on committees. And we do need one supervisor for Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. So, and who is the other one that was on for Wednesday? Is that
the Wednesday schedule is Aaron and, yeah, and then Colin and yep. Bianca and you. So.
Okay, so can either one of you do double duty, take Tuesday and Wednesday? No? Can you?
Or if you,
if you can't, then I will ask the chairman
of the
board.
As long as it's not the third Wednesday, and it's not, right? We already established
right.
that.
Right. It's March 27th, which okay. would be the fourth Wednesday.
Fourth Wednesday, I'm okay.
Okay. Because okay. I did check the policy, and it's either another member of...
No.
I mean, not Tuesday.
No, you're
you can't, you can't
eligible.
At all.
Okay. This is it.
No.
At all.
So I checked the policy, and it is another member of the committee or the chairman of the county board. That's what the policy was.
Oh, so
Jeff,
they can do some work.
If Jeff would like to, that would be fine with me. If he doesn't want to,
I think I'll do it.
But I think he should be given the opportunity.
Okay, I can check with him.
Yeah.
Okay, you will check with him then. Okay. All right.
I'll get back to you later.
All right. The other things I was supposed to share with you is Teddy will be sending an email on Monday, March 18th, so next Monday, with the applications of each youth scheduled to be interviewed. She will only send Tuesday candidates to the Tuesday interview committee and Wednesday candidates to the Wednesday interview committee. Each application will be a PDF file. Interview team members should read and review each application before the interview and complete the rating sheet, which are in your packets, and so most of you have them.
We could do all this stuff beforehand?
Well, you do a rating, and
right.
maybe Chairman
yes.
Bruning would have like,
well,
to fill you in on that.
I didn't do this last time.
Oh, you haven't done this before?
This.
Okay. So what you do is you read through the application that they send in,
right.
and you fill out the top part, the applicant, the interview, the date, and then the written application portion, you can fill that in ahead of time. And then the face-to-face interview gets done while we're interviewing the person, and then the questions that night, what we do is, the reason why we ask you to be there 15 minutes ahead of time is because we will each take the questions. So you'll just pick which question you want to be able to present to the person that's interviewing. You guys went through this already, so you know how we kind of go around the room and just kind of lob questions at everyone and make them feel really uncomfortable and like you really don't want to be sitting there anymore. So, and then you just fill in your answers here. You must circle one of the items down at the bottom for me, because when I take all this and I tally it all up, these are going to help with that. What I do is I tally all the numbers at the top and I stick them into a spreadsheet. If there's ties, then I go and I start looking at the bottom to see how everyone graded them. And then if it's still tied, then I have to look into the comments on the sheets. So write as many comments as you want to so that I have more information.
Okay.
Don't give me halves. I don't want halves this year. There was one year that someone beat out another person because they had a half on there.
You said that to go through all of them before you make your final grade.
Yes.
Before you make.
Yep. Do the interview, the face-to-face interview check part or the circle part or whatever, and then the questions, fill in your questions as much as you can as we're interviewing them. When we're all done, then that's when you should probably go back through and do the final recommendation as you have all of them done. And then it's a little bit easier.
Okay.
Because remember, we have to go from, 27 down to 14. Right? 26?
I go 26 to 14.
26 to 14.
Okay. So, and youth have until Friday to schedule their interviews, and I checked, and it looks to me like Tuesday is already full,
okay.
and there were a few openings on Wednesday, but it
and
looks like it's pretty full.
Four
it looks like you are to be there at 4:45 to 7.
Wednesday and Thursday.
Tuesday and Wednesday.
You're really going to miss one day, Rick.
The 26th.
I probably got it on here.
26th and the 27th. And Chairman Bruning will check with Chairman Gentz.
26th.
And let you know.
Oh, I got you in government all day.
Okay.
Perfect.
I've got it saved. I know.
Okay.
Great. Is that it? Okay. All right. We'll adjourn this part of the meeting then.
I almost forgot to mention, I don't know if you heard about the Fox River Summit, but it's happening next week on Friday. It's in Burlington, but it's an attempt to pull in Illinois on the Fox River. It's only $35, national level speakers. Extension is involved in helping to put it together.
And, $35 admission?
Yeah, which includes... I think a nice catered lunch, and I'll leave three business cards. That's all I have. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
But please follow up if you're interested in any more questions.
And if there's something in particular you would like Andy to come back and talk about, please let Teddy or I know. Okay.